Thank you, Commissioner Slane. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Hetherington.
Present.
Commissioner Marks.
Here.
Commissioner O'Keefe.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Slane.
Here.
Chairperson Fonzie.
Here.
And Commissioners O'Grady and Jack are absent, so we have 5 present and 2 absent.
And they were excused. They did contact me in advance.
Okay.
Let's move on to approval of the agenda. Do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
I'll second that.
Moved by Commissioner Hetherington and seconded by Commissioner Slane. Vote, please.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Slane?
Yes.
Yes.
Commissioner O'Keefe?
Yes.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
And Chairperson Fonzie?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. At this point in time, we open this this meeting up to the public for the public to make comments on anything that is not currently on our agenda and over which the commission can take action. If you'd like to speak to the commission, please approach the podium and state your name and address for the record. Seeing no public coming to the podium, I'm going to close the public comment portion and bring it back to the commission. Is there any planning commission business? Seeing none, I'll close that and bring it to the ex parte communications. Let's start at Commissioner Hetherington and go down.
Nothing to report.
I visited all 3 sites.
Nothing to report.
I also visited all 3 sites.
Nothing to report.
Thank you. Let's move to the consent calendar. And this would be tree removal. Excuse me. Did I hear something?
We've already done the consent
calendar. Yes, no. We did. We did not. It would be the tree removal permit for 5620 San Jacinto Avenue. Thank you. Staff report, please.
Our first item tonight is going to be a tree removal permit, which is located at 5620 San Jacinto Avenue. The applicant on this is the City of Atascadero. The tree is located within the right-of-way on San Jacinto, and they are proposing to do some road improvements in that area. The road improvements will be located on San Jacinto between El Camino and Nogales. The tree that's proposed for removal is a 41-inch live oak. The road rehabilitation project is going on right next to it, and they're going to be doing road improvements, including a new shoulder on the side, and they're trying to make way for safe pedestrian access. The tree is in hazardous condition. There is an arborist report that's included in your staff report, and the arborist rates this tree as a 12 out of 12 with a high likelihood of failure, and the arborist recommends that the tree be removed immediately. The Public Works Department would pay into the mitigation fund for removal of this tree. It would be $683.33 for the mitigation on this tree. There are 2 findings that the Planning Commission can make for removal of this tree. The tree is dead, diseased, or injured beyond reclamation, and the tree is obstructing proposed improvements that cannot be reasonably designed to avoid the tree. Staff is recommending that the Planning Commission adopt the resolution subject to conditions of approval.
Thank you, Callie. Are there any questions for staff? Commissioner Hetherington?
No, I don't have
enough. Excuse me. Commissioner O'Keefe?
Is the recommendation for removal based on the condition of the tree or that it's obstructing proposed improvements?
On this one, it is both of those. The tree is in poor health, and it's a hazardous tree, and then it's also obstructing the improvements.
Okay. And if it was a healthy tree, would the same recommendation be made?
We probably wouldn't be looking at it this time. They're preparing to do the road rehab project, but it was really the condition of the tree that brought it to Planning Commission right now. They are very concerned that if the tree falls and it's located next to the side of the road, that could be a hazard, and it's in the right of way, so it's a city tree.
Well, you didn't quite answer it, though. They're going to do the road improvements. If it was a healthy tree, would the recommendation ultimately be to remove the tree?
If it was still obstructing the improvements and we would recommend to remove it.
And it is obstructing the improvements?
Yes. We don't have the actual plans for the road improvements right now, so we don't know exactly where those, exactly where the curb or and gutter or the shoulder is going to be. But it's right now the tree is right up against the existing asphalt, and when they do the improvements and they'll be installing the new shoulder, it will be in the way.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Proposing any other tree removals on that site. If it was located on the homeowner's site, it would be their responsibility to remove it. And since this is a single-family property, they can go ahead and remove that.
Seeing no further questions, I'd like to open this to the public. If anyone would like to speak on this item, please approach the podium and state your name for the record. Seeing none, I'm closing the public comment portion and bringing it back to the commission for action. Do I have a motion?
I'll do that. I move that the Planning Commission adopt Resolution PC 2008-0029 to approve the request to remove one native oak tree subject to the conditions of approval.
Second.
Been moved by Commissioner Slane and seconded by Commissioner Marks. A roll call vote, please.
Vice Chairperson Slane?
Yes.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Keefe?
Yeah. Yes.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Yes.
And Chairperson Fonzie?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you, Annette. And our next item on the public hearing portion of our meeting is for a conditional use permit for 9435 El Bordo Avenue. Staff report, please.
Yes, our next project is going to be for a 12-client residential care facility. The project is located in the residential single-family zone, and it is designation Z for 1.5 minimum lot size, 1.5 acres. This is about 1 acre net area, and it's located towards the end of El Bordo near the park down at that end. They are proposing a 12-client care facility for elderly care. It is located within an existing residence. This picture is of the existing residence. Currently, the co-applicant operates a care facility here in Atascadero on Mountain View. And this is other care facilities, a 10-bed care home, and it's called Lakeside Guest Home. What they're proposing is to relocate that facility to this new site on El Bordo. This is an image of the floor plan of the existing residence. It's 3,550 square feet, and the property is served by city sewer. There will be slight modifications to the existing residence to comply with occupancy requirements for a care home. These include things like smoke alarms and fire sprinklers, I believe, are conditioned on this one. There's some other upgrades like that to comply with the occupancy. And there are 6 parking spaces that are going to be provided on site. There are some landscaping conditions that have been added in on this. Here we see the house from the street with the front hillside. And this is the parking area where the 6 parking spaces are proposed. So what staff has done is conditioned all of the code-required landscape upgrades. These include 5 feet of landscaping between the side property line and the parking area, shade trees throughout the parking lot, and a masonry trash enclosure, which will be screened by landscaping. There's also a chain-link fence along the side of the property back here that the staff has conditioned be screened with landscaping. There's also a condition for street trees to be planted every 30 feet on center along the front property line. Here's a picture of the landscape plan as the applicant has submitted it. The owner is requesting modification of some of these conditions. One of those, one of them relates to a public works condition to slurry seal the road on El Bordo. This is a standard public works condition in order to maintain the street frontages, and staff is not recommending that this condition be waived. The 4 other requests that the owner is making regarding the landscape, they are relating to, landscape near the parking area. They're asking for only 3 feet at that location instead of the 5 that's required. And the street trees along El Bordo, they're asking that those be waived and instead shrubs be planted along El Bordo. And they're asking that the trash enclosure be made out of wood and not masonry. And the last one is that the backyard will have no additional plantings. So these are requests for the Planning Commission to consider. The zoning ordinance does allow an exception for Planning Commission to waive some of the landscape requirements that are in the code if the Planning Commission can make the finding that there is adequate landscaping already on site. A draft negative declaration was posted for this project, and it's included for Planning Commission certification. These are the findings for conditional use permit, as are shown in your staff report. And tonight, staff is recommending that the Planning Commission certify the proposed negative declaration and adopt the resolution subject to the conditions included in your staff report.
Thank you, Kelly. Are there any questions? Commissioner Hetherington?
Kelly, I'm
look at is if we can see that from the roadway, we would have something to say about it. But I think it's up high enough that it's not visible from the roadway. So I'm not sure. Do we still have that requirement to make it masonry, or can we go ahead and honor the request for wood?
The Planning Commission couldn't approve a wood trash enclosure. It's standard that staff requires masonry trash enclosure just because they're more durable. Mm-hmm. And when we're looking at more of a commercial use at a site like this, we look for something that's going to last a bit longer.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner O'Keefe?
With regard to landscaping in the parking lots, that abut a residential zone should be separated from such property by landscaping strip with a minimum of 5 feet. That's not the one. It's the landscaping on the parking lot. If you put landscaping in there, wide strips of that, is that going to interfere with emergency vehicles being able to have sufficient turnaround room? One of the things I asked you was because the slope on that driveway looks like it exceeds current standards. And while they do have, at the present time, a large area there for parking, if there's landscape strips, then I think that could interfere with movement.
The landscape strip is fairly small compared to the size of the area that they have up there, so we don't see the landscape interfering. We did send this to the fire department for review, and they didn't have any concerns with the site plan.
But did they look at the fact that you were going to be requiring landscaping strips separating the parking there?
We did send it to the fire department on both plan checks, and they did not have any comments.
Okay. And the chain link fence is in the backyard, isn't it?
Yes, that is correct. And so the Planning Commission could modify that condition to make it so that they don't have to plant the landscaping there if you feel it's not necessary.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes, Callie. What is the reason the applicant prefers not to plant street trees?
I think it's probably best referred to the applicant.
Okay. All right. My understanding is the Planning Commission cannot waive the slurry seal. Is that correct?
Yes. There is not an exception in the ordinance that would allow Planning Commission to waive this. It's decided on by the Public Works Director. So if Public Works feels that it's necessary, then they're the ones who should be the ones to waive it.
And Steve's not here this evening?
No, he's not.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? I have one. I went to the site. I did not get out and wander around behind the building feeling that that would be trespassing. I couldn't see if there was a patio or some place for the residents to go outside so they could enjoy planting if it was done. Is there a patio?
I do not know what they have planned for the backyard or what's located back there, but we have not conditioned anything for the backyard. The code doesn't require any upgrades, so the only conditions that we included are the ones that the code specifically requires.
But the landscaping would be by the chain link fence, which encloses the backyard.
Yes, it's just in this area right along here, along the side property line. And it's only because a solid fence is required between this property and the single family use next door. Chain link fencing doesn't meet that requirement, so we are requiring the landscaped chain link instead. They could also put in a solid fence.
Thank you, Kelly. I'd like to open it
excuse
up.
Me.
Oh, excuse me, Commissioner O'Keefe.
I did get in the backyard. Actually, mm-hmm. A current owner happened to be there. And I had knocked on the door, and I was going to go back anyway. And there is some vegetation planted on the east side there. Is it the east side where the chain length fence is? Yes, so there's a very healthy-looking apricot tree and a couple other things there. So there's kind of a little buffer there.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. All right, I'd like to open it up to the public and ask the proponent to address the commission first, if you would, please.
My name is Al Clark. My name is Al Clark.
Yes.
I'm the owner at 9435 El Bordo. I live at 9535 Carmel in Tascadero.
And I'm Diana Bishop. I'm currently the owner of Lakeside Guest Home at 9220 Mountain View Drive in Atascadero.
Very good. Why don't you tell us about your plans?
I'm going to defer a lot of this to Diana.
They can't pull into my driveway. Also, the size of the house, the newer house, is it's a lot bigger and a lot nicer for my residents. There's a bigger area for us to have recreation on the inside as well as outside in the back of the house. There is a large cemented patio that's already there. Plus, there's a lot of future use for the backyard where I don't have right now.
Thank you. I know the commission had some questions regarding the changes to the staff's recommendation for slurry seal, which we cannot waive, street trees, landscape buffer. Could you address those, that you had some problems with those?
Is it possible as far as a slurry seal? Could I defer that to the engineer? Is that Steve Kahn?
He is not here tonight, unfortunately.
Yeah. Could we make a note of that issue could be followed up with him?
So are you asking that the commission waive that condition, or what exactly are you wanting us to do?
Well, I want to make sure that after you guys have made your decision that I still have the possibility to go back and talk to Steve and find out their feeling on it as far as that's concerned. So I want to leave. I don't want the approval be based on whether or not that issue gets resolved. Because either way, if it's required and it can't be waived, in my mind, let me step back and give you a little history. I've been the owner of the house since inception. We planted all the current trees on the site. And the soil, that's called Chalk Mountain there. So obviously, high alkali, there's no organic matter in that soil. Every tree that you see there on site was planted as a mature tree. That apricot tree was my father-in-law's old apricot tree from Templeton that we transplanted when we moved there. So the soil is very difficult. The owner's running a business there. She wants it to look nice. We want to do planting. We want to make sure it has a good appearance and is functional for the clients. So, back to the Steve Kahn and the slurry, that street width there, since I've been living there so long, we saw the street many times get ripped up for the new sewer line and other such like that. And if you drive down that road, I probably didn't notice driving down it, but you can see the remains of when that sewer was put in, which was probably about 7 years ago. And I understand the reason for the condition, but that section of the road is going to be the only section that's going to be slurry sealed. I mean, I am going to be doing the driveway and cleaning that up, but, you know, I would basically like an exception to that because the road basically is in the condition it is because of the previous development that didn't clean it up. So
we will take that under consideration.
Okay. So do you want me to go through the items of concern?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Yes.
On your Item number six, Exhibit B of your conditions of approval. Basically, it's 6 through 11. Before we really get into all those, I'd like condition number 19 to be edited. Diana Bishop here has been in this care facility business for a long time, and she noticed the wording of this isn't appropriate for what she's going to do. So I'd like for her to explain item number 19. It says, the facility shall not house non-ambulatory clients. I did have Tom Peterson from the fire department come up to the house and walk through the house, review the driveway, the parking area, the turnaround area, and all sorts of. And Tom was more than willing to help and see this project, you know, with all its conditions approved. Diana?
Yeah, number 19, it states the facility shall not house non-ambulatory clients. That would mean that I would not be able to have clients that were hearing impaired, clients who were used walkers to get around for mobility and safety, any client in a wheelchair, or even if I had a client with the diagnosis of dementia. So I would like to have that changed to where it said the facility shall not house bedridden clients.
We will discuss each of these among the commissioners when we close it to the public comment portion. So why don't you go ahead and state your other concerns at this time?
The interesting thing about this process, this ambulatory versus non-ambulatory, and is that even though we move through this process, the state comes in and reviews the whole thing, and the fire department, they're really concerned that you know, we meet all the state standards as well as the city standards as well. So there's other processes we have to review, and obviously this one's important as well. So I'll go through the points. The parking area, well, I think that's, let's see. No, number seven has to do with the, let's see. Yeah, the 6 foot wide at the fence at the parking area. The commissioner's point about the space being wide and having the cars kind of push out into the approach is a very good observation. We propose in our items to make it a 3 foot wide space and in planters, so that the planter will be up high and act as like a buffer for the cars when they pull up. And here again, the intent is to make this look presentable for people and clients that come up, patients and their family to come up. We want it to look nice, but then again, we don't want these cars to be sticking out. There's still space for them to get in, but we think if we put them in planters and we make them 3 feet wide and we have trees along that section, I think that's a good compromise for that situation. Item number eight. Basically, it's the issue I just talked about the landscape stripe along the property line. And then number nine, the street trees along El Bordo. Like I said, we enjoy trees. You just had to, it's ironic we're here about this and you have a presentation about trees. Trees are good, but the concern is that the soil is poor. We're afraid if we plant them down there at the bottom, that we'll have a drip system on all the other systems. They may not last. And if you drive down the street, if you notice the park's on the right-hand side, there's very few trees on the left-hand side. And as you drive up to the property, and look, it kind of opens up to the area, which is actually Tascadero Mutual Water owns that adjacent property over there. So we don't mind putting trees in the planting areas up by the house because that's where the people are going to spend their time. The cars are going to be parked, and the visitors are going to come in and out. But we'd like an exception to right on the street.
Excuse me, sir. Could you clarify number eight? That I wasn't sure what you were asking. That was a landscape strip along the six-foot-high solid fence or wall. It would be, let's see, You wanted to reduce that to three? If I understood that
you
was
know,
in seven as
well. Thank you for the correction. The fence actually runs past the parking area and down the hill about halfway. That whole area is going to be planted. We're going to be putting down bark and low shrubs, that whole area, against that wooden fence all the way to the driveway up there. So what you're going to see in the future is that whole area, as you come up to the house, and the whole area is going to be planted with shrubs, drip system, there's going to be bark. The whole thing is going to be very presentable. The natural grass is no longer going to be there, as I called it in one of my write-ups. So the idea is that whole area is going to be planted as you drive up with low-lying shrubs on a drip system. I think those have a better chance of surviving on a drip system than what happens, having been there so many years, you get a lot of the ground squirrels and stuff basically tear apart any small 5-gallon tree type thing. You really have to protect them. So I guess I don't really have an exception to eight other than the fact that we're actually planning against that fence and out.
So if I understand you right, you're actually exceeding the five.
Right, eight. Number eight. Okay. That's true. I guess I don't want an exception to that one, I guess. And then item 10, the chain link fence by landscaping. You don't have the plan up there, but the commissioner's observation when she looked into the backyard was correct. There's currently a couple of trees there, and then where the chain link fence is in the backyard, on the other side, which is basically a retention basin for the Mutual Water Company, there's bushes grown all up against that. And I'll have the owner of the business talk about why she wants to minimize planting back there, but her plans are basically to put in lawn back there because that's where she's going to bring out the residents to do activities.
With all of the trees and all the plants, I know that's nice and it would make it more beautiful for people from the front to see when they're coming by. But my idea is, you know, my residents are going to be in the back and it's not cheap running one of these homes. And so the more plants and the more trees and the more shrubs we have to plant in the back, that's just going to make a lot more water that I'm going to have to use to keep everything going. So that's why, mainly the reason why we're asking to cut down some of the shrubs.
One of the commissioners had mentioned, there's a, like Diana touched upon, out the back, there's a large patio that wraps around the whole back of the house. It's like 16 feet, and it runs along the whole back side of the house. And then beyond that, in the back, there's going to be a lawn and sprinkler systems to maintain that for the activities. And then item 11, the trash enclosure. Like one of the other commissioners commented about the visibility issue, I understand the need in commercial projects and stuff like that. And we were going to construct a pretty substantial, you know, wooden structure, 6x6 post with, you know, all the necessary ideas that going through the building plan check that they're going to review for. We would like exception to that just from the standpoint that we have a wooden fence there. It's going to be set next to the wooden fence. And I talked to Diana about this issue, and I was concerned about, you know, the visibility aspect and the way the house is oriented just for the client. She says it's a non-issue, whether it's wood or masonry is not an issue. And then, as mentioned earlier, it can't be seen from the street because it's going to be tucked way back in there. If there are any questions, I'm willing to answer.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Commissioner Hetherington?
In looking at the floor plan, I see seven rooms. How many of those are for two people? You said it's for 12 beds. I'm just trying to figure out that the layout that we have in our packets shows seven with, I think, four bathrooms.
Yes, there's three of the rooms are going to be for private use, and then the other four rooms will be for double occupancy.
Any other questions? Thank you. We appreciate your input. Oh, excuse me. One more. Commissioner Mark.
Hi. Regarding the slurry seal, I see your point there. I don't know if we can do anything about that, but as a perhaps something that we can deliberate on later, would you be willing to set aside some funding, what it would have cost you in slurry seal, to assist the city in repaving that road? That road that road does need some work.
Part of about 6-7 years ago, I tied into the sewer system and I paid an assessment for that, and that. And then as the street went down, then my assessment went up for that. You know where I'm going with this, don't you? I'm more or less concerned to fix, obviously, the money of paying for that and to the practicality of it. And then another point is the fact that actually if they do the slurry seal in there, that's a fairly actively traveled road with the dog park, the golf course, and the park and the kids' park area. They're very, you know, well-traveled road that they would pretty much have to block that whole road because the condition is to the center and 10 feet beyond. Well, if you walk that street, it's not even 20 feet wide. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like 18 feet or whatever the county minimum was when they put that road in, because that's the county's property, as you know, on the other side of the other side of the road there.
Okay, so what I understand is that you would not be willing to do that.
Well, what I'd be willing to do is get a clear decision from the engineer of record. If he says do it, I'll do it. If he's willing to give us the exception, then that's fine, which would be Steve Kahn.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner O'Keefe?
This is a conditional use permit, and I think with regard to whether we can make a decision about a condition needs to be clarified by the community development director. If you have a conditional use permit and you approve something, if there's any changes, it has to come back to the commission.
Any other questions for the applicant? Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to be clear, if the slurry seal is a deal breaker, we'll slurry seal it. But I just want to make sure that there's an opportunity for me to come back and talk to, because obviously Steve's over there having the discussion that's important. So I guess that it's possible that this condition could be handled during the building permit process, because I think part of that condition states is that has to be done before he can get occupancy of the slurry seal.
We'll
Thank
check.
You.
Thank you. Would anyone else in the public like to speak on this item? Seeing none, I'm going to close it to the public and bring it back to the commission for discussion.
I think it would improve it. So I'm not thinking in terms of, and I noticed that one of the trees that was recommended on the landscape plan was a valley oak. Well, that's absurd because it's the wrong place for valley oak. You plant valley oak where there's some groundwater, and they've typically been where the soils are pretty rich. So not looking necessarily for a big tree, and I don't think, you know, then it would be that if it's mulched heavily, the amount of water would be reduced. They're probably right that they might have to put in 5 gallons or 15 gallons, but I'm not looking at a big expense, and certainly think it would be out of character to line those up in a row. With regard to the slurry seal, I don't think that we have an option on this, again, as I said, but Warren can clarify this. It's not something that can be determined afterwards, because if there's changes, it has to come back to us. And I think that when they mentioned putting their plantings in planter boxes, they would be using soil that they bring in, and they would have a lot more choices. In some ways, this requires more care, but it will provide a wider variety. So I think the site lends itself to doing that if you want to, you know, bring in color and things like that. the issue of the backyard and the chain length fence back there. There are native shrub, and if you looked in the back, you could see what kind of shrub grew there. So there's a buffer there, and nobody else sees that. I would like to see the trash enclosure made out of masonry. They just look better for a longer time, and I don't think that would be a major expense. And I would like to hear from a staff about that one condition, about the ambulatory, why that was put in there as it was. Because typically, my understanding is these kinds of requirements are made by the licensing agency that approves these facilities.
Yes, Steve McHarris, Deputy Director, and to address that condition on the non-ambulatory residents, that comes from our building division, from our building officials, so that also likely refers back to the building code and the use requirements. So that's not something that we would be prepared to talk about tonight in terms of negotiating whether that condition can be in or not. So the options of the commission are to approve that condition and deal with the conditions that you do have the ability to deal with, or continue the item to allow staff to further review that condition.
Okay, and if we approved it and then they had to come back for some changes, would that be an additional cost to them? What would cost them the least to get that point clarified? Because I think it is an important point.
If you continue the item, then that would be the least amount. You would probably want to check with the applicant to see if they can afford the time to continue the item. If you approve the item, then it's approved, and they would. And then if they needed to come back to make any changes, that would be another application.
Okay, and how long would it take for you to get this additional information?
We could probably continue it to the next Planning Commission meeting, next scheduled meeting.
All right.
Commissioner Hetherington?
I would think that Steve Kahn would be available to talk about parking and such things at the next meeting as well.
I would agree. I have a question before we vote on this. Regarding the handicap spot, that there's a place for six spots. I could see them very clearly, but that wasn't mentioned in the staff report.
Yes, the building department would probably require one of those to be a handicap spot, which would take up one of the other parking spaces, so they could still have five on site. As a conditional use permit, the only parking requirement is whatever the Planning Commission approves. So if you're fine with five spaces and the applicant thinks that's adequate for her site, then that would be fine.
Very good. And the applicant mentioned that he would like to put in something that is wider than required by staff. Would that be a problem?
No, but I think the applicant was actually talking about the side property line here along the slope.
Correct,
the
yes.
One that's in the condition is this property line here along the future parking area. This is where the landscaping is required. And it's fine to have that in boxes, but the code does require that it be a 5-foot landscape area between the parking and the property line.
Very good. Any other comments? Commissioner Slane?
In regards to the request by the owner, and there's only two that I don't think that we should no, there's two that I think that we should go ahead and change. One is the request to not to plant any landscaping in the backyard. This is their business. I believe it's their backyard. It's private to those folks. It's not visible.
That street needed to be slurry sealed.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Marks.
Staff, could you tell us what is required by code of these items that the applicant wishes to eliminate? Which ones are actually required by code?
All of the conditions that are in there are required by code. There's nothing that's in there that hasn't been, I believe, except for the masonry on the trash enclosure. That one's just a standard thing that we always ask for. The landscape conditions, however, can be modified by Planning Commission.
Okay.
There is a special exception in our landscape code that says that Planning Commission can modify those requirements. The slurry seal does not have that kind of exception. Only the city engineer can modify that. And then the condition about the ambulatory or non-ambulatory residents, that's all about the building code, so that's not one that we would feel comfortable changing at this time without talking to the building official.
Okay. All righty. Thank you.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Well, I would like to recommend that we bring this back at the next Planning Commission meeting. I think the ambulatory part is key for me. And when you talk to the building code, if you could have their definition of ambulatory for us as well. But that would be my motion, is that we bring this back.
I would, if the commission would allow me, I would like to open this back up to the applicant to ask him if we were to approve it as it is with the wording regarding ambulatory as we are allowed to do, how that would affect his business, whether he would prefer a continuation or for us to go ahead. Do I need to do a motion for that?
Before you do that, would you clarify what you said? What are you
changing? Okay, I would like to have the applicant weigh in on this. If he would prefer that we pass it with it, the wording regarding non-ambulatory as we are allowed, we can do that,
yeah.
Or we can continue it.
Okay, but if we approve it and then it's against code.
No, we would have to approve it as it is stated.
Okay. But then if it comes and it's been approved and it comes back, then they're going to have, and they find out, okay, I hear what you're saying. Okay.
Okay. Commissioner Marks?
I need some clarification as well. Mm-hmm. Now, you're saying approve all of the requirements, including the slurry seal, the landscaping.
Not necessarily. That would be a commission decision that we would do corporately. But what I would like to know is if we were to take number 19, the facility shall not house non-ambulatory clients, mm-hmm. which we have been told by staff that they're not comfortable changing. If we were to approve that tonight, how that would affect their business. So if they would prefer we continue it, in other words, we should do so. And if they would prefer that we go ahead and take action, we can do that.
Mm-hmm. Since there is some concern about slurry seal, and I have some concern about slurry seal, having been out and looked at that street, the street's in need of repair, and it seems a shame to mm-hmm. slurry coat something that's needs to be torn up and replaced anyway.
Excuse me, could you speak just a little louder when you're speaking?
Okay, so
that's good.
I am concerned about slurry seal and a couple of other issues, and I do think we need to plant the street trees. So if we're going to, I still need some clarification
okay.
on what you're saying.
Okay, this is
here.
What I would like to do. I would like to ask the applicant about one thing and one thing only. That would be item number 19, the wording regarding non-ambulatory.
Okay.
And I'd like to get their opinion on the non-ambulatory portion. Then we'll bring it back to the commission to discuss the other items.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have any problem with that, or may I open that? All right, let's go ahead and open it to the public once again. And we did have that question regarding the non-ambulatory wording. Can you give us some input on that and how that would affect your business?
Currently at my license, I hold a license at each of my two facilities, and the state and the fire department is the one that makes the final decision on how many ambulatory and non-ambulatory clients I'm allowed to have. At Lakeside right now, I am licensed for 10. I have 9 non-ambulatory and 1 ambulatory, and that's how it states on my license. The fire department, when they do their final inspection, they are the ones that sends a letter to the licensing division and tells them their recommendation is that, for instance, this house, she wants it licensed for 12. We're going to let all 12 be non-ambulatory, or they could say I'm going to have 10 non-ambulatory and 2 ambulatory. It just depends on how the rooms are set up as to how they make their decision.
So if we were to pass this with the wording as it currently is, which says they have to be, they cannot be non-ambulatory, how would that affect your business?
I wouldn't run a business if it was all non-ambulatory.
Okay. I think what we're getting from staff is they don't feel comfortable changing that wording without going back to staff to talk about the effects. I think it would be
for non-ambulatory already. How did that happen when the code says that you can't have non-ambulatory?
Well, I think, again, what's happening, and I think the applicant's correct, there needs to be some clarification. So I think, just to give you some background, there's a process where we review the application, and there's some discussion back and forth with corrections on plans, et cetera. And this did come up early on in the process, and I'm not sure why there wasn't any communication between the applicant and the building division at that time. So that's why it's unusual we're having this discussion right now. Usually this is ironed out before you ever hear a project. So it sounds from staff's perspective this needs to be ironed out, again, with the building division. That's why we don't have the ability to give you a recommendation. I wish we did, but we don't have that expertise. So they need to look at this and decide if it is possible to go forward. It very may well be, but we need that assurance from the building official.
Thank you, Steve. Any other questions for staff? Would we like to make a motion at this point?
I'd like to make a motion that we continue this for 2 weeks, and also that Steve Kahn be present to weigh in with regard to the slurry seal, or else address the issues. And are there any other issues?
The handicapped parking?
Oh, the handicapped parking issue.
And I think the plantings on the bottom where you were referring to, maybe not the big trees, but smaller trees and native plants.
Well, I think the street trees is kind of loosely defined and can be interpreted differently. I don't think it was staff's intention that they needed to be lined up. It's just that to get some kind of trees in there that would grow given the soil conditions.
And also the 3-foot planter boxes and the two items in the negative declaration that were not done correctly. Is that okay to amend your motion?
Yes.
With those?
Yes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Motion by Commissioner O'Keefe, second by Commissioner Marks. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner O'Keefe.
Excuse me. Yes.
Commissioner Marks.
Yes.
Commissioner Hetherington.
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Slane.
Yes.
Chairperson Fonzie.
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Our next item is a variance and lot line adjustment for 9040 Mountain View and 8260 Portola Road. Staff report, please.
Thank you. Our next item is going to be for a lot line adjustment and a variance on Mountain View and Portola Road. The project is located at the corner of Portola and Mountain View, as you see here on the map. It's these two parcels. They are zoned single-family residential Y, which has a one-acre minimum lot size. Tonight, we are looking at a request to adjust the lot line between two existing colony lots with a variance to allow a reduction in size of a legal non-conforming lot. What this is, to give you a little bit of background, there are two lots here with one single-family house on each lot. The house on Lot 51 on Mountain View was actually built over the property line back in 1969 when the house was originally built. They probably just didn't do a survey at that time, didn't really know what their property line was. It's just been recently found out by the owners that this has happened. So they went through a civil suit, and they have a settlement agreement, which includes doing a lot line adjustment to fix the encroachment. This is the area of encroachment here where the house was built over the property line, and the new proposed lot line would give them enough setback to meet our current zoning ordinance. As part of this, both lots are smaller than the minimum lot size, so that's why we're bringing it before Planning Commission tonight instead of just doing this as a staff-level application. Since both lots are smaller, Planning Commission has to approve a variance to allow this exchange of property. The total area of exchange would be 1,062 square feet, and it would increase the Lot 51 to 0.4 acres, and it would reduce Lot 50 to 0.24 acres. There's a number of code sections that were cited in your staff report, and these really relate to all of the zoning ordinance requirements as far as Planning Commission's approval on this. When we have a lot that doesn't conform to the minimum lot size, it's usually not allowed to be reduced unless we can come to Planning Commission and receive approval of a variance. Both lots are smaller than the minimum lot size, so in this case we're not taking a conforming lot and making it non-conforming. They're already non-conforming. And if Planning Commission can find make the findings for a variance, then they can approve this project. It does qualify for a Class 5 categorical exemption. These are the findings for the lot line adjustment and for the approval of the variance. And staff is recommending.
Yes.
Commissioner Marks.
Do you know if the two both units are on sewer or not?
I don't know definitively. I know it's very close to the Tascadero Lake, and I'd be surprised if it's on the septic, but I did not do that kind of investigation.
Okay, thank you.
So you are representing which property owner, which address?
9040 Mountain View. Lean Living Trust is my client, but I'm here on behalf of the Christophers, the neighbors. Their attorney is Scott Noble. He's up in Walnut Creek, couldn't be here tonight, and asked me to be here for both parties.
And this will resolve the case for you?
Yes, it will. We paid some compensation to acquire this extra land. The encroachment, nobody expected. I even talked to the builder, and he was surprised there's an encroachment. And we have a lot of theories we're kicking around on how it happened, but settlement was just to how do we fix it going forward.
Very good. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Connell. Would anyone else like to speak on this subject?
Hi. My name is Ed Salas, 118200 Portola Road. My corner of my property, it joins at the south end of the Portola address. Now that house has been abandoned for as long as I can remember, at least 25, 30 years. I remember when I was building my house that line that is projected that goes up from Lakeview up to Mountain View, when I came to the city and I asked for a map because I needed to locate my house and my lot, and I received a map that has a straight line from Lakeview to Mountain View, but I can't find that map in my files. But I know that map did exist because that problem came up before. Where Mr. Lean's property, his house is built on Mr. Christopher's property. And I wanted to talk only about the maintenance of that house. I see people coming and going in that vacant house. I don't know who they are. There's a tree an oak tree that's kind of dangerous that is on our property line somewhere in there. I haven't gone into his property to find out if it's adjacent to the other property or it's all in his property. But I know that its big branches have broken off. There's no maintenance in that place that I know at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Would anyone else like to speak on this item? Seeing none, I'm going to close it to the public and bring it back to staff for a question or two. The speaker had some questions about maintenance of the house and maintenance of a dangerous tree on the property line. Is that something that we can address with a lot line adjustment as Planning Commission?
No, that would be a civil issue that the property owners would need to work out themselves.
Thank you. Any questions for staff before we bring back a motion? Would someone like to make a motion tonight?
I'll do it. I recommend that we adopt Resolution PC 2008-030 approving PLN 2008-1285 lot line adjustment 2008-0091 and variance 2008-0031 allowing an adjustment of lot lines between two existing lots and reducing the size of a legal nonconforming lot based on the findings and subject to the conditions of approval.
Excuse me, you said 3-1. I think you meant 1-3.
1-3? Could we correct it to say 1-3?
Very good.
Thanks. Good
I
catch.
I second it. Okay. It's been moved by Commissioner Slane, and Commissioner Fonzie has seconded it. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Chairperson Slane?
Yes.
Chairperson Fonzie?
Yes.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Keefe?
Yes.
And Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. That closes a public comment portion, public hearing portion. We're going to go to Commissioner comments and reports. Any reports?
Yes. Go ahead.
I think you were beat by Commissioner Marks.
I just wanted to let Chair know that I will not be here next Planning Commission meeting.
Okay, very got it.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Is it not required to do a land survey before
development funds? The San Luis Obispo County Housing Trust Fund puts out a newsletter. And in the last one that they had, it was the title of it was Rental Housing is Out of Reach. But there was a website that could be accessed. And there was very specific data for all the cities, including San Luis Obispo County. And one of the things that was said in there is that there really isn't any rental housing available for people who are on SSI and at the lower level of Social Security. But, you know, this has come up before, and we haven't had the statistics and the numbers, and we all tend to make up things depending on what our orientation is. But there are some numbers out there. So I would strongly encourage those of you who have not been taking the time to read the Housing Trust Fund newsletter when it comes out, and you can get it online, and to check out some of this. There is information out there for us to work with.
Is the website on that, Joan?
Yes.
Could you let us know what it is for the public as well?
It's www.n as in Nancy, L I H as in Henry, e.org/OOR/OOR2008. And if you have any problems with it, let me know if it doesn't work for you.
Thank you for sharing that with us. Any other reports, comments? I'd like to just state for the record that we'd like to send a little word to Grace Pucci, our recording secretary. We have a card for her. I'm putting this on the TV so she can see it. We miss you, Grace. We want you back. You're doing a good job at home, we know, but we hope you're feeling better. I'd like to bring it to the director for, excuse me, it would be Davey Resource Group presentation.
Hi, staff's going to just give a brief presentation or introduction before Davey comes on. We just want to let you know this is this item is actually a little bit of background on it. This consultant, as well as another consultant, we had staff was directed to work on city council goals, and one of those goals was is regarding natural resource protection preservation, and the two areas of concern were biological resources and tree resources. We've city community development department has looked to bring on a professional arborist serving city staff as well as professional biologists, and those two goals have been met with consultant selections. Tonight we have the what we could refer to as the city arborists in terms of the consulting services to the city. The importance of this is in the past or up to a month ago, staff has been handling all the native tree enforcement of the native tree ordinance and providing the expertise to the best of our abilities. And in some cases, that could be limited because staff were not arborists, and we can rely on the development community to bring their arborists on. And when there are certain cases that that applicants or members of the public need assistance, they're not able to bring on an arborist. We haven't really had that ability to assist them very well. So what we have now is we have an arborist on staff that's on call to us, and we're able to look at trees that may need protection or may need attention, whether it's a private development project or a public project, as well as as well as hazardous conditions. And hazardous conditions might be actually extremely important because they may need to be taken care of immediately. So time is of the essence in those conditions. And we have the ability to have somebody go out typically within 24 hours. With that, we also have the ability to have a professional report prepared, so there's a record of the observation of the trees and the protection requirements needed, or if a removal is needed. With that, we've hired Davy Resource Group, and Davy Resource Group is a national company with local presence. They actually have an office here in Atascadero, and that was one of the reasons for their selection. They have quite a team of research scientists, arborists, tree care professionals. And with us tonight, we have two of the members of that company that are here, and they'd like to give you a brief presentation on their background, their abilities, and their services to the city. And then after that, we'll take some time to have some questions and answers. So with that, I'd like to introduce Jack McCabe of Davy Resource Company.
Thank you.
Most of them I think you're aware of, and then a little bit about where I see some opportunities and give you a chance to ask any questions. I want to introduce Michael Bova, who is actually the consulting arborist. He's a project coordinator, so he works on a wide range of projects for us, but he is assigned 100% to work for the city of Atascadero. He lives here in the community, and as Steve mentioned, he's available to be on-site usually within 24 hours. So a little bit about the history of our company. We're actually the oldest tree care company in the world. We were founded by an immigrant from England, John Davy. His motto was, do it right or not at all. When he immigrated, he was a groundskeeper at Kent State University. He had a passion for nature. He founded his own tree care company in 1880 and actually was the first published book on tree care. He wrote this book called The Tree Doctor, which drew from many different scientific articles on how trees grow, but it was really written for public consumption, public understanding. And he tried to take that passion for trees and that passion for nature and disseminate that at a public level. Along with that history, that passion for trees, John Davy had a passion for people. And as he grew a company, he recognized the importance of training and the importance of development. And really within the first 20 years, he had founded what we continue today, this program called the Davy Institute of Tree Sciences. Every year for a month, employees from around the country are brought into our corporate headquarters in Ohio to undergo an intensive training program in the care of trees in everything from rigging and climbing to public presentation skills. Actually, this last year was the 99th year, and I had an opportunity to be a lecturer at that program. So it's a neat program. Davy was family-owned for 99 years, and in 1979, it's, I think, kind of a coincidence, the same year that the city here incorporated, the Davy Company was purchased by the employees. And so we've been an employee-owned company since 1979. We're actually one of the, I think we're in the top 20 largest employee-owned companies. And it makes it a very unique culture because both Michael and I are owners, and it's not a publicly traded stock. You're able to buy shares, but having that ownership interest at the field level, I think, brings a different level of dedication, a commitment to quality, a commitment to the communities we work in. The range of services, I think many of you may be familiar with the Davy Tree Surgery Company. It's a division. They do utility line clearance services, so they are the ones who prune trees or remove hazard trees around PG&E's facilities. We also have a large division. About half the company is based in tree care operations, so most of those residential tree care offices are based in large metropolitan areas, the Bay Area, San Diego, Denver, throughout all of North America, the United States and Canada. We have a large division of consultants. That's the Davy Resource Group. We also do commercial grounds maintenance, large tree moving, golf course maintenance, and then we have a group called, and the a division of the company is called the Davy Institute, and they are dedicated to research and development and training. So the Davy Resource Group, we were actually broken out of the Davy Institute, that R&D and training division, in 1993 to bring those kind of higher-end consultant services. We're considered the eggheads of the company, so to speak. And we've taken those services and that expertise to our clients. So we go out and in the market, and we're working with, again, utilities, municipalities, the federal government, state governments, and in some cases, large institutional property owners. We've got about 300 field employees. About half of them are certified arborists. The rest are arborists in training or are field biologists. We've got a GIS IT shop and about 50 managers, principals, and project developers. Again, based throughout North America, our Western Regional Headquarters is actually here in Atascadero. So our purpose as a division within the company is to develop solutions to tree problems using our expertise and also innovation skills. So in many cases, what we're doing is developing new approaches to old problems. Our primary services are arboricultural consulting. We do a lot of tree inventories. So for trees have social benefits. They help children, learn better. This is all scientific research that's been done at a university level when they compare communities with healthy urban forests with those that don't have trees in the built environment. I also want to talk about the economic benefits of trees. We've done some research, and we found that, in many cases, trees can account for almost 25% of real estate values. I know that's probably not news to you in the planning industry, but it's something that we reinforce with all of our clients. There's research by the University of Washington that trees actually increase the viability of commercial districts. They've compared commercial districts that have a healthy urban forest with those that don't have a lot of trees, and the receipts are higher. Interesting research project with the USDA, they found that for every dollar invested by the city of Santa Monica, they got $1.61 in return, that they can calculate the benefits of the trees in the city, and they found that they actually get a net benefit from their investment in maintenance. One of the things that Davy has been a partner on, because we are a national company and we are committed to research and development, is the iTree website. Well, it's a website and it's a system of tools that urban foresters can use to actually calculate the benefits of the urban forest. I think this is important for you because, in addition to the consulting arborist services that we can provide, one of the nice benefits is that we can also start to look at what is the monetary or quantifiable value of the trees that that are being impacted by development. So some of the tools that are in iTree that we've helped develop with the Forest Service, we were actually we're the only private company involved in this partnership. U4 is an urban forest ecosystem evaluation model. Stratum is a street tree assessment model, and then there's some tools for kind of free tools for communities to do sampling and tree inventories. This is an example of a report. It just gives you an idea of this was something we did for the city of San Diego, where we assessed all the trees in their downtown core district, and we could find that the net total value is over $250,000 a year. So these are benefits that we can quantify. It's peer-reviewed science done by the U.S. Forest Service, and we've helped put it in a format that's easy to use and understand. So, as we go forward, some of the opportunities that we see, this tree inventory and assessment, we do it on a large scale. So we can, for example, we've inventoried all the street trees in the city of Los Angeles. We're actually starting later this year to do the city of Sacramento. But we've also worked with smaller cities. We did an inventory and a management plan for the city of Brisbane, where we looked at managing the trees in their city, but we also looked at fuel loads because they were very concerned about fire risk at a community level. So we helped identify where fuel loads are and how to integrate urban forest concerns with fire management concerns. So that's one component of management plans. We've also we have construction and on-site monitoring. Our probably largest project that we've done in that regard is was the Washington, D.C. Capitol. They recently built an underground parking structure under a Frederick Law Olmsted landscape area, and they had some historic tulip trees. Part of that project was for us to put arborists on site and monitor the health of the trees while they lifted them up, moved them off site, and then built the garage, and then moved the trees back on site. So that gives you, I think, a kind of a range of the expertise that we can put on the ground. You know, and then the other component is actually program development. And this is what I'm talking about here is really the concept of, you know, how does the city care for the trees? And, you know, as Atascadero grows and develops and matures as a community, you know, you may begin to look at how do you, you know, who does care for the trees? How does that happen? How is the program in place? And it may be something that you want to look at, and, you know, we'd like to partner with you on it. And I think that's about it. I can talk a little bit about inventories and the types of inventories. One of the key things that I think is important, you know, as a national company, Davey has been involved at an industry level. You know, we throw out this term ANSI standards. The American National Standards Industry is kind of a cooperative where people who have expertise come to the table. This is university researchers. This is, you know, private industry people and government officials. And they say, what is the proper way to prove you've done in the last month?
In the last month, I've reviewed three different sites for the city by request. Two of those sites, I actually followed what the initial arborist had wrote for the site. Another one was an imminent hazard, and I relayed that it did need to be taken care of. I think it was important that we have professional eyes for the city looking at something that doesn't have a conflict of interest, that actually looking out for the city's best interests when it comes to removal of valuable trees within the area. And that's not beholding to a developer and just writing what a developer has to say. Also, at the request of staff, I helped write or helped give some recommendations on a street tree planting program that the city public works wanted to do, and kind of updated their specifications that were a little bit outdated. So I've just getting started with the city and finding that there's some valuable information, and just it's just important to have professional eyes look at something for the staff, and then they're giving you adequate recommendations, and it's relieved them a lot, I think, in some of their need to get out and look at trees and not really knowing what it is that they're looking at, and having to rely on a developer's arborist report rather than your own recommendations. So,
thank you, Michael and Jack. I think we do have some questions, Commissioner O'Keefe.
I have a lot of questions, but I'll try not to take up all the time.
Can't hear you,
Joe. Were you involved? Whoops.
I'm sorry. Anyway, I said I have a lot of questions, but I'm going to not try to take up all the time. Were you involved with determining the value of the trees in Santa Monica and San Diego?
Those are two different projects. With the project in Santa Monica, we were contracted by the Forest Service to essentially evaluate what they call reference cities. To essentially establish a baseline for the value. So each of those, each tree's value is different depending on the region, and really going down to a sunset planting zone. And so we had an inventory arborist, go to cities throughout North America to essentially collect data on these trees that were then input into developing these models. So we did have a role in that, but that report itself was published by the USDA.
Okay, are these street trees or native trees?
They're street trees.
They're street trees. And you said that was Santa Monica?
Correct.
Okay, what about San Diego?
San Diego, the Downtown Association contracted with Davey to do both a tree care contract and an inventory. And so we had an inventory arborist in the downtown core, essentially the redevelopment zone, inventory all street trees. And the data that we collected, we were able to convert into this urban forest model.
And did you then place a value on that inventory?
Yes.
Okay, and then did you got the value of the inventory, but what about the maintenance? Because street trees are very expensive to maintain, so you have a value over here, but over here you have an expense. Did you get data on that so that it can be compared?
Not for that project. We do those kinds of projects. We've actually just we're in negotiations with the city of Portland to do an assessment on what it would cost to take over maintenance of their street trees. Currently, street trees in the city of Portland are maintained by property owners, and the city, as they're growing their program, they're looking at what would the cost be, and they want us to compare that cost and then quantify some of these benefits and see if there's an adequate return to their investment.
Okay, and then you mentioned that you have been involved with putting together tree protection ordinances. What about mitigation for tree removal? Do you have any information about determining what the mitigation should be if a tree is removed?
We can help with that, but that's got to be a community value driven. What the mitigation should be is something that's determined by each individual community. We can help provide technical information there, but again, that's
okay. But doesn't the Society of Arboriculture have a value that they place on trees? I mean, they have a formula that they use.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I get lost in this. You have this formula that's used, and the trees in Atascadero would be with millions and millions of dollars using that formula. But when it comes down to cutting down a tree, that shrinks into almost nothing. So none of this makes any sense for me. Can you address that?
Absolutely. I think I can. There's two concepts of value. One is an appraisal value. What would it cost in the same way, what would it cost to replace a building? What would it cost?
Staff has told you that we're going to be looking at, we currently have mitigation for native tree removal, and other trees in Atascadero really don't have any value unless the person who's developing the property determines that they do. So only native trees are determined to have a value here. But we've been looking at the mitigation that we're getting, and staff has been given direction to come back with some reasonably solid information as to whether this can be increased or not. Do you have any idea of how this would be approached?
I do have several ideas, but I think until I really talk to staff and find out what they would need from us, I'm not sure. So I would need to wait till we talk to them.
Okay, and what is U4? Can you expand on that a little bit?
Absolutely. It's taking traditional forestry sampling techniques in an urban forest environment. So we select random plot samples, and it's an urban forest ecosystem analysis system. So
is that any different than what was done with our forester? Because he set up, you know, we've done an inventory of our trees here, and that was done by a professional forester using aerial photography and GIS. And we did, he picked out sample sites where we did ground truthing. And
it's a similar approach, but the benefits in a naturally forested environment are different than they would be in an urban area. So with an urban area, you've got a high ratio of impervious surfaces, and when you get a significant rainstorm, you have a lot of water running off. And so, you know, in an urban area, if you have a higher percentage of tree canopy, that will help mitigate that stormwater runoff. And so the U4 model is really written for urban or urbanized areas. Atascadero is unique in that it's, you know, it's got an urban core and it's got urbanized areas. But
we have a native urban forest. That's very important.
Okay.
All right. And then where's your office located in Atascadero?
Actually, we just relocated from unincorporated county down in Santa Margarita. We're now on Morrow Road, South Morrow Road, 7627.
South Morrow Road goes east and west.
West.
West Morrow.
Sorry, we're between Atascadero and Kerberil.
Oh, okay. All right.
Feel free to stop in anytime. We're in the Meadowbrook Plaza.
Well, actually, I drive by there all the time, so I might drop in then because I travel that road. Okay, I'll let some others ask some questions. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Commissioner Hetherington?
I guess the first report I saw, or maybe the second report, had to do with mobile home park, I think one of our last meetings ago. And I really appreciated, I think at the end of your report, you said no imminent danger. You know,
yeah, that was the one on Santa Cruz, I think.
Yeah, it was. And I really appreciated that because after looking at the tree and looking at the neighborhood of trees in that area, you know, the person that was requesting the tree removal had only been there for 3 weeks, so it was kind of an odd situation. But just having that little bit of information as opposed to, you know, it needs to come down right now is very helpful.
And that's a good example of an arborist and a property owner wanting to remove a tree and an arborist finding reasons. You know, you could possibly find a reason all the time to remove a tree, but this tree wasn't imminent. It had some decay. It had some cavities. It had some issues with it that would reduce its lifespan. And ultimately, it would need to be removed rather than be a hazard to the dwelling that was right next to it. But it wasn't going to fall today, and it wasn't going to fall tomorrow. And so there was time to really evaluate it. It was in a poorly situated area. It was there way before anything else. And so it was in an irrigated lawn, which is detrimental to a live oak. And so it had issues. But that was a good example of arborists wanting something removed, and there wasn't an urgency involved with it.
Other questions? I have a question regarding, let's say, the applicant we had tonight with the he wanted the residential care facility, and he stated that there was problems getting trees to grow because the ground was alkali in Chalk Mountain area. Would you be making recommendations to someone who was an applicant, for instance, on what types of trees would thrive in his soil?
We absolutely could. If asked by staff to provide some recommendations, there are native tree species that could be planted.
Could you give us some information on what you do in terms of fire management?
Absolutely. We've done several projects throughout the West, down to having Los Alamos, New Mexico, after the large fire they had in 2004. FEMA brought some money, and one of the aspects of the project is they hired a large project management firm who brought us in as a sub, and we put individual foresters on site. It was a voluntary program. That if property owners wanted to have somebody come out and assess the defensible space around their property, essentially we would come out and we'd write up a management plan for the property. The property owner would sign off on that, and then a contractor would come out and do the clearance. So everything from removing, excess fuel loads to raising the crown on the tree when they were close to the house. So that's down to the low level. What we've also done on a larger level is community risk assessments. So we've taken GIS information and again, with a sampling approach, gone out and looked at fuel loads, looked at a range of information from proximity to fire station and accessibility of fire hydrants, and we've rated areas in and around a community for fuel load risk and then come up with some mitigation recommendations.
Okay.
Very good. And this may be more of a question for staff. When we get our staff reports and they have tree reports, should we direct our questions to you or should we take them to Davey?
Yeah, is that question
for you
during the week, during the normal week, or at your planning commission meetings?
Well, let's just say during the week when we get our report, and we may have a question regarding the
probably
trees.
The best thing to do, if you'd like to refer your questions to staff, probably directly to myself. What's happening is for us to best manage their time, our dollars, and the service to the public is we are funneling everything through myself. There's not a heavy workload, as you heard. We've done three in the past month, and that's very reasonable. So if the planners have a need, they contact me. I contact Davey, and Davey does the work. So I'm kind of the clearinghouse for them right now. So if you have questions, feel free to contact me. If you'd like, if you're talking to the planner, project planner, and it's related to a project beyond just a tree removal, feel free to talk to the planners directly as well. So you have a choice. But no, I don't think... Well, I think it would be best to manage it through staff so we can best control the contract.
Very good.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah,
I appreciate
thank you for your
report.
Time.
Okay. Director's report?
Just a couple quick items. I do believe we handed out from the city clerk the Planning Commission handbook. Did everybody receive that? So I'm going to schedule a time probably, I think our next meeting's pretty busy, but in July we'll have the city clerk, Marcia, come and answer any questions and go over the handbook for the Planning Commission. And our next meeting, I don't have the whole list of items, but it looks like it will be a fairly busy meeting. We are considering or looking at canceling the meeting of July 1st. It's going to be pretty close to the holidays, and we figure that that might be a good one to pass on. So we're going to load up the next agenda with a couple more items than normal, and then we'll give you a break the following week. And I think that pretty much concludes my report.
Warren, can you give us an idea of the agenda items that you do know we'll be dealing with?
I think obviously the item that was continued tonight, also the West Front Care Home that's been somewhat controversial, that will be coming before you. They need to make some minor amendments to that CUP, but we do expect we'll have some neighborhood concern and turnout on that issue as well. And then apparently there's two maps as well.
Okay, very good. Seeing no further items for discussion, meeting adjourned.